Our freedom in America is fast fading. Our religious freedom, where is it really today? And in 20 years, are we going to join the rest of the world in having to be silenced in our sharing of the gospel? How much do you take your religious liberties for granted? My guest today is Reverend Dr. Gregory Seltz. He is the new director of the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty. Dr. Seltz, welcome to this edition of Encounter. By the way, I'm Judy Redlich and your host today.
Judy, thanks. It's great to be here with you.
We're talking about a case going to be tried on December 5th. Dr. Seltz, maybe you could give a little summary and where we are in this and what we need to do.
The key to understanding this is a First Amendment case. It's about the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion. The Supreme Court has already ruled many times that free speech applies to artistic creations. And in this case, it's a baker who uses his cakes also to say things. He's a Christian. And again, what happened was a couple came in and they wanted him to bake a cake for their gay wedding. And he, as a Christian, doesn't believe in gay marriage. But he did not serve them. He was willing to do anything else in the store, anything else, sell them anything they wanted. But he couldn't be a part of proclaiming something that was against his faith. Well, the state now has gotten involved with this to the point where they are suing him, and he could lose his business, he could lose everything for holding that particular view of marriage. The Supreme Court has already ruled many times that free speech applies to artistic creations. The message conveyed by this is also very important. But if the other side wins on this, they're basically saying that Phillips, that's the man's name, is going to be forced to create a First Amendment expression that carries a message he rejects. And that would be just unheard of, what damage that can do to free expression and free speech and freedom of religion in our culture. So that's really the issue. No matter what your opinion is on homosexual marriage, that is the issue.
I know that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is a part of a group of organizations that is part of the fight to help in this whole religious liberty thing.
Well, sometimes people think that this is about the church and other folks arguing about the definition of marriage, and to some degree that's true, but ultimately this is about a freedom of religion, this is about a freedom of speech issue, and that's even more important at this point, and it's even more terrifying when you start to think about what is at stake, because the founding fathers understood that freedom of speech and freedom of religion were the keys to an enduring liberty for individual citizens, and that's really what's at stake in this particular case.
Freedom of religion and freedom of speech. Well, of course, that's in the Constitution. And
right.
Why wouldn't our forefathers not want it in there? And why would we want to compromise that today?
Well, and see, that's what the issue's about, because people have this case, they misunderstand, I think, what's really at stake. They think this is a live and let live kind of thing, where this Christian baker doesn't particularly care for homosexual marriage, and so he needs to be kind of taught a lesson. In reality, this is not a live and let live type of case. This is a, he will be silenced, and he will actually have to conform his views to the particular views of those who walked into his store. So that's what's really at stake here, is that they're abridging his First Amendment rights. Now, what's interesting is when I first heard about the case, I thought maybe he just refused to serve people. No, that wasn't the case at all. He said, I will sell you anything in the store, anything here is available to you, but I just cannot promote something with my artistic creation, because he actually has a message with the cakes he produces. He said, I can't promote something that I disagree with. But he didn't refuse to serve people. He wasn't doing something that injured or caused harm. And yet he's actually being silenced, and they're bringing a case to silence his ability to even have the very view that he has.
Aren't we supposed to have freedom of speech?
Well, there's a great article. His name is Sharif Gurgis, and it's on thepublicdiscourse.com. And he does a great job of ferreting out all of these arguments. It's called The Christian Baker's Unanswered Legal Argument. And he talks about that because, again, the issue that's standing here is that his First Amendment rights are being silenced, and he will not be allowed to hold that particular point of view in a public way. Well, when you start to think about all the ways that can be applied, to the Christian worldview, even the Christian faith, that should scare people even who are secular, because that could apply to them just as well. So this is what this case is really all about. And pushing back on it is really making sure that liberties are honored for all.
What do you think is going to happen on that day, December 5th?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, sometimes when the Supreme Court kind of acts in ways that are outside its authority, that's happened with other issues, the Roe v. Wade issue, those kinds mm-hmm. of things, where it was by government fiat or by judicial fiat that a new right was created. But when you get into these kind of discussions, all you can do is still try to show people that we're not fighting to protect ourselves as much as we're fighting for things that we think are a benefit for everybody. I think that's what people miss here. We have different opinions on these kinds of issues, but we also have the freedom to work these out individually and in our communities in a civil, humane way. Well, that's what's being challenged. They're actually saying one side gets that protection, one side doesn't. And that's what people should be thinking about, and how chilling that could be for First Amendment expression on a variety of issues. So if it's something that goes against the particular artist and baker, it's going to have a chilling effect on a lot of things. All you can do at that point is start to teach and to show people why this was bad law and why it actually is limiting our rights, not expanding our rights, which some people unfortunately misunderstand, and why this really is a First Amendment issue we should all want to fight for the sake of this baker.
What about the defense? I know that you all are joining other organizations who are teaming up mm-hmm. to fight this. Can you talk about that?
In terms of this particular case?
Yes.
We're all joining up there in terms of there's briefs that have been signed where people are signing on. We're speaking out against these kinds of things. My center doesn't get involved in the particular policy issues. We try to talk about the fundamental moral principles that are involved with these kind of things, because we expect our own people to make their decisions in concert with those things. So we speak about the general principles that are going on here, hoping that our folks would then do the work of calling their congresspeople and those things that they would do naturally as citizens. But again, we try to tell people this is not even a compelling issue just for the church. This really is a compelling issue for all of those who cherish First Amendment freedoms and freedom of speech and freedom of religion, because it's delivered so much liberty and freedom to us as citizens in this great country.
The Alliance Defending Freedom.
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, they're the ones that are litigating the case, and they've been a tremendous support. They actually helped us in a particular issue with a church here, Holy Trinity in Missouri. They've been, again, a tremendous advocate for religious freedom and for religious liberty. In fact, in the case of the church that they defended for us, our church had put together a proposal for some used tires that they could put on their playground at their preschool, and they had, every year they choose 15 proposals, and they give these used tires to those entities. Well, ours was like the number third or number fourth best proposal, but then it was actually turned down just because we were a religious organization, or just because our preschool had an religious affiliation. Well, they fought for us to say, hey, wait a minute, they're a preschool like every other preschool, and they need a playground safe from the kinds of things that happen on playgrounds. Why shouldn't they be eligible for this if they meet every other criteria like everybody else? So they've been a great advocate for us, but for religious freedom in general, for the churches of our culture. And that's what they're doing here in this case.
As a person who's been working in not-for-profits all of my adult life, you see discrimination because of religious affiliation in going after grants. So often there are fewer and fewer grants available out there because one belongs to a religious organization and is trying to raise money for that. And that is scary. And what you're saying, Dr. Seltz, is it's going to get worse if
yes.
this case doesn't win.
Absolutely. And again, that goes right to the heart of the Founding Fathers' understanding of what the role of the church and what the role of religious people was to be in our culture. The new way of thinking for some of these folks is we don't need the church whatsoever in the public square. Well, look at what we're look at what's happening in our culture. Look what's happening in our cities. A lot of that is because the church has been either pushed out or it's abdicated its role. What we're saying is the church was a useful, beneficial thing for our culture. That's what the founding fathers understood. Now, we know that. We understand that. But again, being able to show that and demonstrate that, that's what's at issue here. And if this law were to go, if this case were to go the wrong way, if you will, we would in essence be kind of forced out of the public square in ways that the founding fathers would just not have recognized.
And as you know, those of you who are listening, the Roe v. Wade and prayer in schools and all that, once something is taken out, it's 100,000 times harder to get it put back in.
Exactly.
And so are you willing to stand up and fight for your rights of freedom of speech and freedom of religion? Or are you just going to let it go and say, oh, it'll all work out someday? Well, that's why we are taking several different angles on this show today to help you understand the real ramifications about how your freedom of speech could be silenced if this case doesn't win. Reverend Dr. Greg Seltz is my guest, and he is the new director of the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty. What is that all about?
Well, we're very excited about joining the debates, you know, being actually more of a public voice with those of you who have already been in D.C. We come with this unique perspective that we believe God is at work through his left hand and his right hand kingdom. So there's a sense where God has two ways of engaging the world, and he engages through all kinds of vocations to keep that preserving work of civilization, you know, kind of going, because if you've ever looked at human history, human beings can do some really despicable things. But God's at work to preserve the world, but he's also at work to proclaim this good news of the gospel in Jesus Christ. So Lutherans come with that kind of perspective, and we want to be a part of that civilizing, make sure our culture is humane and engaged. We want to be a part of that voice in the public square with fellow citizens.
So how are you doing that with this new Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty? Give us some examples.
Well, we're going to be an advocate for the things of our church. We're coming specifically about religious liberty issues, about sanctity of life issues, because these are things that define us as a culture. And then we'll engage in these issues about marriage, as well as the freedom to educate our children as we see fit. Those are the kind of the touchstone points for us. But we're there as an advocate for our churches, our schools. We've got 10 universities, 11 universities that get involved in these kind of things. But also, we're there to educate our people to show what it means to actually be a public citizen that serves their neighborhood, that serves their community, that thinks this way for the sake of the neighbor as well as for the sake of the church. And then finally, we're there to undergird those who are hard at work on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good people doing great work. We want to be there praying for them. We want to make sure that they know they're not alone. And so we want to be an helpmate, if you will, to undergird their good work.
That is so important.
Right. And see, we want to make sure that they know they're not alone, and we're here to actually help them. We're not here to take over their job. We're there to be a useful tool, a useful helpmate to them any way that we can.
How can people get more information about the Center for Religious Liberty?
Well, our moniker is lcrlfreedom.org, lcrlfreedom.org, and they can look up the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty on our Facebook page as well.
We just have a couple minutes, Dr. Seltz, left in this interview. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
Well, the one thing that's a key for me is engaging these kinds of issues. Sometimes people think that we're doing this just to protect the church. And let me just say this. The Church of Jesus Christ doesn't need any protection in the sense that the message of Christ will get out one way or the other for the sake of people. But we've been given liberties in this culture that actually are a blessing, and it's flowed from a Christian worldview in many ways. I wish people, even if you're not Christian, I wish people understood that when you curb religious liberty in this culture, you will curb liberty in general. And that's the one thing I try to get across. I'm not preaching at this point. I'm actually just talking about the liberties that have been set in this culture and how much they've blessed a lot of people, religious and non. Well, once you curb religious liberty in the First Amendment, you start to curb liberty, period. And that's what's at stake. So even if people are sitting there thinking, well, I'm not particularly religious, this is something you should care about, too. Now, as Christians, We want to talk about that liberty that comes from a God who really loves us. Wish everybody knew that. But even if you don't understand that, being a religiously free person is going to be a benefit to the culture in ways that I can't even describe for you. So again, keeping that in mind, that's a battle that everyone should be concerned about, but especially we, the church.
Dr. Sells, what can people do about this right now, between now and December 5th?
Well, first of all, we've got to be in prayer about these things because this is a fundamental issue. This could change things radically about our ability to be public Christians for the sake of our neighborhoods. It could change a lot of dynamics in our culture in a very negative way or a very positive way. In fact, the second thing I would just say is you got to come to grips with what this is really all about. Educate yourself on what the real issues are. And I think that would be the first and foremost thing. Pray and get educated about what's really going on with these things.
How concerned are you? Are you willing to pray? Are you willing to do your research and your homework and believe God for miracles to happen in this whole situation? I'm Judy Redlick. This is Encounter. Dr. Gregory Seltz has been my guest today, and I hope this has enlightened you on what's really happening or could be happening to your religious freedom if you don't get involved. Stand up. Talk to your congressman. Make a difference while you still can. Dr. Sells, thanks so much for being my guest.
My pleasure.
I'm Judy Redlick. This is Encounter.